Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blue Jays and Yankees after 1 o'clock at the stadium. Yankees home opener this afternoon. Weather looks good. They're going to play baseball.
It's new Yankee Stadium.
Sure. I haven't been to that one. Went to the old one.
Congrats. Want me to shake your hand?
Yeah, it was cool. I went there the last year of its existence.
Do you feel any type of way to see the new one or no?
Because you saw No, I don't.
You actually, like, you want to go your whole life, like, are you a believer in that? Like, some people have movies that they're like, I will never see because people tell me all the time, like, oh, you have to see it. It's like, are you that hard and fast with never going?
Nobody has ever said, you got to see the new Yankee Stadium. That's the thing about the new Yankee Stadium. It does kind of sound like
a ticket guy.
Soulless. Like,
you got to see it.
Nah, it's like everything I've heard and seen doesn't seem the same. It's not the same. Yusei Kikuchi against Marcus Stroman. Oh, God, I had a point. I forgot about it.
It's my fault.
Yeah.
You were chuckling about something, right?
God. I got it. Got it.
Yeah, see, look at me.
So as mad as I was about Davis Schneider not starting the third game of the Astros series against Christian Javier, I think I might be more angry if he doesn't start today's game, quite frankly. Because then we saw a proof of concept with the one hitter. And I get it, Marcus Stroman, also a right-handed pitcher. But, like, holy cow, have we not learned our lesson? We just decided that, there is nothing that's going to dissuade us. We're sticking to our guns, and doesn't matter. You know, guy's on a roll, feeling good. You know, the potential of this guy being a real thing. I think today might put me in an even more sour mood if we don't see Davis Schneider in the lineup somewhere.
Normally, I would cheer for that, but we're so far removed from the next show that it does me very little. So I would, in that case, then I would just like to see the Blue Jays do the smart thing and put Davis Schneider in the lineup. But for the purposes of the show, I'd gladly see them do the wrong thing and have you losing your mind. But again, it's useless to us.
Yeah, and I'm going to try not to be the weather vane when it comes to this Blue Jays team, because we're adding the right caveats, right? That, hey, it's a long season, the longest in all of professional sports, 162 games, and it'll make you look stupid. But yeah, it feels very important, this series, especially considering how ready this fan base is to turn on this Blue Jays team. Like, you don't even have to win the series. Honestly, you could get swept if the pitching just lets you down. Like, say the Blue Jays get swept in this three-game series in the Bronx.
Yep.
But every game's 8-7.
No, I feel like I tried to make this point yesterday that, yeah, you need the offense. The pitching has proven itself enough that you just need to see something go right for the offense. And, yeah, obviously, you don't want to get swept regardless. But I actually do think people would sign up now for a sweep where you scored 6 or 7 runs every game than a 2-1 series win where you're eking out 2-1 wins for every single game. I actually think a lot of people would sign up for that right now.
All right, this Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Nothing like opening day in Major League Baseball. It is opening day in New York City, where the Yankees are good, and that's where we find Dan Schulman. Happy opening day, Dan.
Happy opening day. So I guess we get 3 this year, one at the Rays, one at the Yankees, and then one at home on Monday.
Yeah, that sounds right. But, like, this one feels... I mean, Yankee Stadium is it's not old Yankee Stadium, but also, like, again, the Yankees are good. They made, outside of the Shohei Ohtani signing, the biggest acquisition of the offseason. He throws out the game-tying run at the plate in game one of the season. He's been so good all season long, has Juan Soto, and they only have one loss. Like, it does, I don't know, you tell me, you're in the city. Does it feel different than other opening days you can remember in the Bronx?
I don't think I'll know that till I get to the ballpark, but I think the answer to that will be yes, it will. So, you know, like you said, you know, they didn't make the playoffs last year, right? So there's kind of extra scrutiny on this season. They've gotten out of the gates very well. Juan Soto being a Yankee is a huge, huge, huge deal here. Even if he's a Yankee for 1 year or if he signs a 13-year extension, we don't know. But, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of electricity in the air. It's going to be cold, but no rain or anything like that. But it'll be a little bit brisk out there. But I think it'll feel more like a late September game. You know, it'll have that kind of a vibe to it in the Bronx today.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt the guy that's on the mound from their perspective either. It always feels like a little bit of a charged up atmosphere whenever Stroman gets the ball. But sticking with Soto for a second there, this is something Ben and I have talked about, but it's an odd thing to say for a guy who's played in the, you know, big games that he's played in, and he was such a focus of baseball, you know, with the trade, not this one, but the trade from Washington to San Diego. But does this season not feel, and, you know, it may be unfortunate for Blue Jays fans to hear, but a bit of a coming out party for him is kind of joining that face of the game conversation, you know, with Ohtani just hitting this year, it feels like he's a little more of a mortal as opposed to this like magic creature we have in baseball. Does it feel like Soto doing what he's doing to start the year, and we'll see how the year goes, but playing in that market and just the Yankees feeling like they have the stars again, does it feel like he can kind of join that conversation to be among the faces, if not the kind of face of the game this year?
Yeah, I think he's been in it at times, depending on the quality of the year that he's had. I mean, he's certainly one of the best players in the game. We know that. But I agree with you. Given that, you know, everything is magnified when you're a Yankee, for better or for worse. It's just the way it is. He's also, again, a free agent at the end of the year, and who knows whether that leads to him having an enormous, you know, let me get my contract kind of season. But he, you know, he's been an MVP contender on a number of occasions already. But, you know, the combination of him and Judge too, you know, if Judge is healthy all through the year, like how many times have we seen a duo that good, you know, like Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, I go back to Cal Ripken, Eddie Murray, like it's not very often where you have two guys this good back to back in the lineup. So yeah, if Soto is the best version of himself, he will be as big a name and a face as there is in the game. And the crazy thing about him is how young he is. He's 25 years old. He's younger than Bichette, a little bit older than Vladdy. And I think people, not that they would think he's 30, but, you know, I think people would think he's maybe 27. He's 25, and he just got going so young that he's going to be a free agent at a ridiculously young age.
Yeah, he's really good. The other team, it's still to be determined. Offensively, not a great start. Dan, for the Blue Jays, obviously historically bad. If you talk about a team being no hit and one hit in the first seven games of a season, it's the first time that's ever happened, as the Blue Jays have been. It's baseball will make you look stupid, right? When you have wide sweeping takeaways after seven games. But how concerning is this offensive start for the Blue Jays?
Yeah, you don't want to have wide sweeping takeaways. You and I have talked about that, you know, probably a dozen times every year over what can happen and then what does happen and how much things change. But it you know, what we've seen so far is a concern. I mean, I was looking at some numbers this morning. They've got six doubles as a team in seven games, and Justin Turner has four of them.
Yeah,
they only have two doubles by somebody not named Justin Turner. They've hit, you know, they've hit seven home runs in seven games. Not great, but not horrible. They've drawn their walks, but they're just not making enough hard contact. They're just not coming up with hits. And yeah, it is a little bit of a concern because you're hoping they know what everybody is saying. They know what the talk was last year. And you're hoping this isn't something that, you know, really becomes worse and worse if they feel the pressure and so forth. So we'll see. Like you said, you can't make any big grand pronouncements after seven games, but guys have to hit better. I mean, the big three at the top in Springer, Guerrero, and Bichette, we can talk about the bottom all you want, and the bottom's got to get better too, but they're not going anywhere if the top isn't pretty good. And you know, those three guys just have to be good, and then the guys at the bottom have to chip in here and there. Right now, like, neither one of those things is happening. Justin Turner is swinging the bat great. Davis Schneider's obviously been a force in limited opportunities. And not much else is where you need it to be offensively. So we'll see how they do here. Stroman today, and then Clark Schmidt, Luis Gil. So they're kind of getting 3, 4, 5, if you will, wherever you want to put Stroman, whatever you want to call him. But they're definitely getting 4 and 5. And it would behoove them to get the bats going and hopefully win a couple of games here, because Seattle's got their top three lined up for the series in Toronto.
The Davis Schneider thing is like a perfect storm of narrative, right? Like, you got this guy who was the only bright spot of a very disappointing season, despite the fact they made the playoffs last season. He was his series at Fenway Park and the home run in game number one, his first at bat, like that was the best point of the 2023 season. You got this team underperforming offensively. You got him being the only guy that has performed seemingly every time he steps to the plate in the two starts that he's had. Plus, you have the way the postseason ended last year and seemingly a lean towards just the numbers and maybe that rearing its ugly head and him not getting the start in the final game of the Astros series. It really, it's a lot, Dan. And the, like, the bubbling anger that this fan base is, you know, I read my Twitter mentions and maybe I shouldn't, but like, it feels like it's very close to the surface right now. Well, just one, do you expect Davis Schneider to start today?
My guess is yes, and I'm sure I'll be wrong, but I thought it could have gone either way against Christian Javier because of what, you know, Javier throws. Marcus Stroman is different. He's a, you know, sinker, cutter. He's 92 down in the zone and then a cutter at 89. And they try to keep Schneider away from guys who have 95, 96 up in the zone. Stroman is not that guy. I'd like to see him start today. You know, I know people hate hearing this, but they do have to balance whatever day, you know, today versus big picture. And when John Schneider says, you know, they're not going to just 7 days into the season, they're not going to change their whole game plan. I kind of get that. But today, the matchup to me favors Schneider. And I would like, you can't sit him for all three games here. You can't sit him for all three games against Seattle. They're not seeing any left-handed starters in this series or in the Mariners series. Like, he's got to get in there. And I think if he's got to get in there, I think today is the perfect day to do it because Stroman is on the mound. The issue becomes, who do you sit? And I know Kiermaier's not hitting. You can move Varsho to center and put Schneider in left and so forth. And I know some people want to see IKF sit. You know, we can't ignore that they just signed him to a two-year contract. Like, they want to see what he's got. And IKF has not been the biggest problem offensively on this team. I mean, he's not doing great, but he's not killing them. He's got four hits and 16 at bats. He's hitting .250. So, but I would like to see Schneider in there today. I would like them, hopefully, if he continues to hit or to be a constant power threat when it comes to the plate, I'd like to see it move off a little bit of left-right. And I think it will, and I think it is, actually. I think they don't just look at left-right. They look at matchups as well. But I'd like to see him, if he deserves it, I'd like to see him get more of an opportunity. And to answer your question about today, I think this is a good matchup for Davis Schneider today.
Yeah, I agree with both of you, but just for my own sanity, like, I cannot hear it from Ben if he doesn't start today. So, like, I know you have very limited input on the lineup, Dan, but if you do, please, just for my sake, get him in there. You mentioned part of the roadmap for him getting in is maybe Varsho moving over to center. Are you surprised that they haven't tried to make that more explicitly his job? And, I mean, obviously with Kevin Kiermaier being on the team, that's where you want Kiermaier, but we understand what Varsho is off. Offensively, and you know, the trade, we can relitigate it forever. I don't think it's ever going to come up, you know, glowingly from the Blue Jays, just given what Moreno is going to be. But the best way, it seems like to me, to tease as much value as you can out of the player would be to use him as the elite center fielder that he can be. Are you surprised that that hasn't been? And again, like, I don't think they're averse to it. Obviously, they're happy with him playing center field, but I also don't think they've made that a priority either. Are you surprised with the way they've handled kind of that part of using Varsho?
So three things. They re-signed Kevin Kiermaier to a deal for $10.5 million.
Yeah.
Number two, it's 7 days into the season. And number three, we never talk about defense. We're only talking about offense here. But obviously, Kiermaier in center and Varsho in left is better than Varsho in center and Schneider in left. Not that you're losing much at all when Varsho's in center, but you're losing something if Schneider is in left. So, like, again, at the risk of, you know, it's 7 days into the season. So Kiermaier is going, he sat one of the games, and he will sit. We know he's not going to play 160 games this year. Even if he's great, he'll play 125, 130 games. They want to give him some rest. So it's seven games. I think we've got to let it play out a little bit more. He's 1-for-18 right now. He hasn't looked good. I grant you that. Every single player on this team had a 1-for-18 at some point last year. Every single one of them. It's just they didn't do it in the first week of the season when it's easy to look at Baseball Reference and say they're 1-for-18. It will play itself out. It's seven games into the season. If Schneider hits significantly more than the other guys, Schneider will start playing significantly more than the other guys. But the you know, the rush to judgment after 7 days, it's just not the way it goes. It's just not the way it works in baseball. And history has proven it you can't do it. You can't have such knee-jerk reactions in such a small sample size.
Yeah, and David Schneider's entire career has been a small sample, you know, in the major leagues at least. His career has been a small sample, still under 40 career games. But how many does he have to play where he looks like an offensive plus before you start, like, believing in his ability to play more against all comers? Like, where is the dividing line? Because,
well, we saw it last year, right? I mean, they did play him. When he came up last year, he was playing like he is now. He was playing against lefties. They just happened to see more lefties than they're seeing in this stretch. And then he caught fire, and he played almost every day for a couple of weeks. And then, getting back to my point about everybody on this roster had 1-for-18 last year, do you know what do you remember what David Schneider went through last year?
At the end of the season or when he got benched for, like, the week?
No, he had an 0-for-31 towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
0-for-31.
Took some walks, though, if I recall.
His numbers were with some walks. His numbers were incredible because the first couple of weeks were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I love David Schneider. I think David Schneider is going to play more and is going to be a big part of this team. And I hope they believe in him, and I hope they give him the opportunity. I'm just saying all of this is a little too knee-jerk reaction for 7 days into the season. I'd like to see Ernie Clement get in there a little bit more too. I love Ernie, and he can run and he can play defense and he can make contact and all of that. So they've got to figure it out. They've got to see who hits and you know, 2-3 weeks from now, if things are the same, the conversation will probably be a little bit different. And I think we'll see the playing time be a little bit different, but they're not just going to give up on two guys they signed to big contracts in the offseason 7 games into the season. It just doesn't work that way.
No, and the conversation can be very different about this team on Monday if they go out and swing the bats very well at a ballpark where that happens quite often. It is the Blue Jays and Yankees, Yankee Stadium, this afternoon, 1 o'clock on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Dan, thanks for this.
You got it, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Dan Schulman, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I don't think I'm knee-jerk reactioning anything. Are you knee-jerk reactioning?
No, I think, and yeah, I mean, like, to the point Schulman was making, it's like, yeah, I'm not asking them to sit Kevin Kiermaier down. I'm wondering why they re-signed him in the first, and again, like, not that he's the problem, not that you can't have him on the team, but when I go to the Varsho point of it all, it's just, I would have thought that you would have said, okay, can you do something? And apparently the thing is left field, but you would have just thought him in center field. And I don't think the Schneider thing is a knee-jerk. It's not about how small his sample size is. That's not why this isn't knee-jerk. It's about the sample size we've seen from all the other guys that are involved that he is losing at bats to. That's why I don't think this would be a knee-jerk. You are a jerk, but this isn't knee-jerk.
Yeah, and I also understand the thing, like, hey, if your plan is to mostly give David Schneider the starts against lefties and not so much against righties, like, he has to be in a favorable matchup against righties, you're loath to deviate from that plan in game 7 of the regular season. I also, you know, it should be stated that they were, and even 500, they were 3-3 going into that final game. It's a different deal even if you're, I don't know, the Mets, who were 0-for going into the second game of their doubleheader yesterday, or even the Astros, who don't seem to be sweating too much after their sweep of the hands of the Yankees. I mean, part of that is being World Series champions from 2 years ago. But yeah,
also part of it's Jordan Alvarez just mashing balls to the moon.
Yeah, it's like the at a certain point you do get into the thing that I've talked about where it's like, hey, managerial firing, surprise call ups, like, it's all on the table, and it's not in game 7 or game 8 of the regular season. But yeah, it's just like I said, it's the perfect storm of pressure and narrative building, right? Where you have the animus of the end of the regular season and the decision to remove Jose Berríos because of the numbers and this team disappointing offensively and then having the bad offseason and then not scoring and then the numbers thing being part of the reason why he doesn't start in that game because you don't hit and then you don't hit again. It's just like it was the perfect storm of making people angry. Like if the Blue Jays won that game or, again, even scored a bunch of runs and it was the bullpen blew it late, and they still lost 2-3 to the Astros, the feeling about the David Schneider narrative is different. Not for me.
I want to call it the Schnarrative now.
The Schnarrative is different. The Schneiderative? The Schnarrative?
You said narrative, like it just all rolled off.
Narrative.
Yeah.
Schleiben, Gleiben.
Yeah, you do sound like that guy, Professor Frank. Yeah.
It's different for you guys, not for me. Like, I just, and I know.
Not the learned baseball fan like yourself.
Dan's right to bring up the 0 for 30 to end the year.
You could not help yourself, but like,
and a couple of walks leave him alone. Okay, so it's like, I'm not just looking at the numbers here, people. I'm watching the games.
Oh, yeah.
I'm watching the process.
Don't Dan Schulman watch. No, I think he watches them. Yeah.
He does. And I also, like, you know who wasn't fretting that? It's David Schneider. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to have a 1,400 OPS for my entire major league career.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he's coming back down to earth. That's right. But what if earth for him is like an 820 OPS?
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good for a guy who is a late round draft pick, who was not viewed as a prospect on this team, who's like found money. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, 20 plus home runs, you know, 360 on base and passable defense from David Schneider. What a dream that would be, which is all I'm talking about. So, yeah, obviously he was going to have an 0 for 30 in there.
With a couple walks mixed in.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, if you can continue to get on base through your bad...
No, definitely.
Batted ball luck, like, that is not a nothing.
No, that's a massive skill to have. That's how you go from having a high average to being a good baseball player. Like, that's part of what we talk about with Big Ernie Clement, right? Mm. Like, he's not going to do that unless there's a very big change coming to his profile that we have not seen at this point in time. Like, he's not going to give you that. And I'll go back to it again. It is so much less about my belief in Davis Schneider than it is about my lack of belief in all the other options available to you. Like, you know, I mentioned don't re-sign Kiermaier. It's like, that's way less of a problem for me than giving IKF $10 million or $9 or whatever he ended up at. Could have just not done that, and that would have allowed you to, I mean, attack the third base position in a different way, move people around the diamond in a different spot, allow you to have had just a better lineup construction for a team that, again, for a team that we knew, even if you were the biggest believer in all the pieces of this offense, you thought Vlad was going to have the year he was going to have, and Springer was going to be able to kind of maintain what he was, and Bichette was going to continue to be great. There were going to be a ton of holes in this lineup. And the idea of, like, IKF continues to be the one that I think is going to be the big mistake of the offseason. It's like, this team won't be undone because IKF can't hit. But it kind of will if he's taking a bats away from guys who can.
So, yeah, I mean, if Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Ernie Clement were making the same money and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was not a free agent acquired, I think you might see just Ernie Clement getting the majority of the starts at third base or
entirely
wherever
possible.
Kiner-Falefa is playing.
And this part has to be mentioned as well. Like, the team is in a money in, money out spot right now. You know, they wouldn't have, for the right guy, maybe it wouldn't have been that way. But they're now in that spot, at least in part, because IKF makes what he does.
All right. When we come back, talk to a former Olympian, currently an analyst for NHL Network, former NHL D-man, Jason Demers. Next, as the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Leafs, Habs, Hockey Night in Canada, tomorrow. Leafs are in the playoffs. They just need a point, I think, to officially get that X next to their team name in the standings, which is all important. It is weird, though, like, despite the fact that, like, Leafs are going to be in, you will see different head coaching decisions made after the actual X is there for the Leafs.
Will you?
I think so.
I don't know.
I think so.
Okay.
But we'll see. Lots still to be decided, especially in the Eastern Conference, as the Penguins are alive with Sidney Crosby. Maybe alive in the Hart Trophy conversation. Let's talk to another Olympian. It is Jason Demers, analyst for NHL Network, former NHL D-man. How's it going, Jason?
How are we doing, Ben and Brent? And yes, to your point, the Pittsburgh Penguins are still alive, believe it or not.
It's ridiculous, man. I mean, they've always kind of they've always had a positive goal differential this season. Special teams have been an issue for them. They just were miserable on the power play, and it's not like they way outplayed the Capitals yesterday, but got it done. I mean, let's talk about the Crosby Hart Trophy conversation. This is one we were having earlier. He's not in the top four according to Vegas, and the points are a lot back of Nikita Kucherov, who is in the lead for the Art Ross Trophy. But if this is like most valuable player, and they make the playoffs, does he have a case?
That's a tough one, just because there needs to be a serious conversation on how this is judged, the Hart Trophy and most of the trophies that aren't, points-based, because it seems to me like we're 50 games in and everybody picks a winner, and then it's like, well, this is the winner. And then the last 32 games don't matter. You know, it kind of happened a little bit with the Calder Trophy, and it happened with the Norris, and rightfully so. I think Quinn Hughes still wins the Norris, and I think, Bedard wins the Calder Trophy. But the fact that we're just like locking these things up at game 50, when, to your point, like Crosby could make a case, Austin Matthews has a case, Roman Josi has a case. Do I think they get it? No, because I do think Nikita Kucherov has done, I think without him for that stretch of the season, they're a lottery pick team borderline, and then they've kind of figured it out post deadline with some great trades, but what he's done in Tampa this year is just insanity. So I think Crosby, if he drags them into the playoffs on this run he's been on, which has been, he didn't have any points last night, but he's just been on absolute fire. And I think it's something like he's got like over, he's at like 18 points in like 11 games, which is just nuts at his stage of his career to be producing this much and this efficiently. So I'd love to talk about him because I just have such a respect and admiration for him. But do I think he merits it over McDavid, McKinnon, Kucherov? No.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I almost wonder if, and I think the answer is probably one of the guys who's going to win the Hart will win this award too, but I could see him getting more love for like the Ted Lindsay among the players of respect that way than I could among the Hart. Like, what do you make of that in terms of just the way he is still viewed? Because, he's done the ultimate thing, right? Like, it's like there are now guys in the league who grew up idolizing Crosby and watching him play, and he's still putting up point per game seasons. Like, I almost look at it as he could make not a better case, because it's the same award basically, but I could see him having a better shot almost at the Ted Lindsay than the Hart.
It's another Lindsay kind of said something. I was on the NHL Network with Bill Lindsay, and when Crosby came into the league, he was given the mantle of like the league ambassador, the guy to usher in the new era, and he's done that for years. And, I think he's released a little bit of it to, guys like McKinnon and McDavid who have now have to take it over. But he's just done it for, 19 years, and it's absolutely incredible. And I hate the guy, and I would hit him with my car because he's so darn good. He's just so darn good, and he's just so amazing night in and night out. His skill level, how he thinks the game, is just off the charts, even at this age. And he still looks spry. He still looks like he gets out of bed and he's not sore. So it's amazing what he does to take care of his body. I'm interested actually this year to see the Ted Lindsay Award, what shakes out of it. Because it's not clear cut for Ted Lindsay, because guys think a little bit differently. Because, somebody just for an example, if I were to vote on the Norris this year, I'd probably take Roman Josi. But I think of it differently than somebody that might take, a guy in the NHL might say, no, it's Quinn Hughes. So, because I just feel like it's so tight all over the board for the Ted Lindsay. So
It's going to be interesting to see who gets picked. I'm assuming Kucherov will get it too. If he wins the Ross, I think it'll be a Kucherov year in terms of trophies.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Auston Matthews could still score 70, and that was the thing. We all kind of shook hands, you know, midway through the season. Well, if Auston Matthews scores 70, don't you have to give him another heart? Because that's what we said when he was the first guy to break through the 60-goal plateau of this generation. And are we not there anymore? It feels like we've kind of moved on. It's like, 70, it's no big deal anymore.
Yeah, I think we all said 70. Well, I've said if he gets 70, he's like, you know, of course, he's definitely in the conversation. And, you know, he's seriously considered. It's just so hard with watching what McKinnon and I would probably say now it's almost a two-horse race. I got to see what Connor does the next few games, but they've kind of faltered a little bit the last few games.
Q9 points this weekend coming, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, man, there's some big points on the board. I mean, the West is set, but, you know, the eight teams are set, but it's not really set within how it's going to shake up. To get back to Auston, it's just hard to deny what Kucherov's done and McKinnon, you know, those two. Like, it's just tough. It's so tough, like, what they did.
No, you can deny 70 goals. Well, let's just deny it. Let's deny it.
Let's say 75. Let's say 75, Auston. All right? Let's all shake hands here if you get 75.
I mean, 75 is the new bar.
I want, forget the heart. I want the annual Who Jason Demers Would Hit With His Car Award. You mentioned that earlier. I would like to go back through all the years of your career and see who you would have handed that out to. Because I feel like there's a wide breadth of player in that. Like, I feel like there's some guys who are fringy NHLers, and there's some superstars that have got that award throughout the years.
Yeah, it's typically a guy that, you know, I love to hate. You know, I love Sidney Crosby. I just hate him because he's so darn good. So I just would hit him with my car.
I mean, it's funny, you know, we try to break the Hart Trophy down into a million different things, and it's like point per game or big goal or just a guy, the captain. I like that award criteria better. It's just like, you don't like him, would hit him with your car, you know, in theory, not in actuality. Yeah. You mentioned Kucherov there. What the Lightning are doing, for once, I don't have to be terrified of this as a guy who watches and cares about the Toronto Maple Leafs. This gets to be someone else's problem now. But God, what a problem. It feels like they're going to be. I mean, I don't know that they'll be favored in any series that they're in, but I don't know that they should be underdogs against just about anybody in this league. How terrifying a proposition is it for whoever ends up drawing Tampa that they seem to be finding it, and Vasilevsky is finding his form again here right as the playoffs are upon us?
Oh, I mean, be scared of the Tampa Bay Lightning right now. Like, I've watched them kind of closely the last, like, they're fine. They found out their game, and those, I kind of said, other than Carolina trading for Kuznetsov and Gensel, I mean, I think Tampa wins the trade because Duclair and Dumba have just, it was like a switch flipped on this team when they got that depth, and they've been scary now, you know, especially having Tanner Janot come back now. I don't know if Tanner Janot is hurt for a little bit after that fight with Reeves.
Yeah, that didn't seem nice.
No, he kind of got, it looked like he got caught right on the temple chin.
I bet Tanner Janot wants to hit Ryan Reeves with his car right now, is what I think.
Yeah.
Car might be in rough shape, though, if that were to happen.
Probably the only way, you know, credit to him for going with Reeves. They're not in the same weight class, but he hung in there. But, you know, it's hard to hang. Typically, when you hang in there with Reeves, it means you're getting hurt. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, I don't think it's not Toronto's problem either, though, because like they're nipping on Toronto's heels. Like Toronto could potentially, that 1-2-3 spot isn't sewn up in the East with Tampa playing the way they're playing.
Yeah, but does that really matter? Like, okay, I guess you can make the argument Leafs catching the Panthers and having home ice advantage matters, but like, if you're the Leafs, do you care whether you play the Panthers or the Bruins, which is likely what it's going to come down to, whether they finish third in the Atlantic or finish in that top wild card spot, I suppose, or it could be the Rangers. Like, I don't know, take your pick. You're starting every series on the road. Do the Leafs, should they really care whether they finish third or in that wild card spot?
I would want, and this might be a hot take, I would probably want Florida right now.
Yeah.
If I'm Toronto, I watched the last game against them, and yeah, I know Florida's a little sick, but Toronto's not scared of Florida right now. And I think they have a chip on their shoulder. And I think for them, I just don't know with the Bruins, like the Bruins just frustrate Toronto with that structure, and it just doesn't seem to work. And I just don't know in a playoff series if, you know, and I wouldn't want New York if I'm Toronto, because I think New York walks all over them in the playoff series. I just think with Shesterkin and that forward group up front, I think it's a little tough. So for me, like, I just feel like, and it's funny to say Florida's the team you want to go for, but I feel like Florida's not surprising anybody this year. Everybody knows who they are. So it's not like this big, oh, they make it as the 8th seed. No, they have some pressure now. And I think Toronto's figured out kind of how to play them and the formula for them. And, you know, I'm not afraid because I like the depth of Toronto more than I have in the past. And they're a lot more gritty on the back end than they have been in the past. So I think that's going to be a benefit. And a team like Florida, who has no rush game and they're just a dump and chase team, well, you need heavy D and you need heavy forwards that can kind of break the puck out. So, you know, for them to get Florida, I just think it matches up well. So for me, I'm like, I think you got to worry about getting that 3 or 2 spot, but with Tampa just flying right now, I don't know how it's going to finish. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, they look so good, and they're doing the thing, I don't know, like both those Florida teams have done so well towards the playoffs, is just getting mad about anything and everything. Like last, I don't know if you saw this, but last night, Stamkos ran into Hagel, caused him to leave the room, and guess what? Everyone on Tampa just jumped Wi-Fi, who was the closest guy in Montreal around, because why not be offended by something? The Leafs seem to have a little more of that. I don't want to overstate it. They're not the Broad Street Bullies. They never will be, so long as the core of this team is the core of this team. But how important is it that they do seem to have, it's not just that they're yappier, they do seem tougher. Like, obviously, the Domi and Bertuzzi, and obviously Ryan Reeves adds to that, but even just some of the fringier players on the lineup seem to be a little more comfortable in a kind of rough and tumble playoff style game. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, you need to be, because if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, you're the Toronto Maple Leafs around the league a little bit in terms of no one takes it seriously and outside of Toronto.
Some Leaf fans, like, want to run you over with their car right now.
Yeah, yeah, you're winning the award right now. Yeah.
But this is a little bit of hard truth for them. So it's like, I'm glad that they've finally kind of taken it. And it kind of all stemmed from that Morgan Rielly play. You know, Morgan Rielly said enough's enough.
Big time.
He went and took that suspension. And then it, like, the switch flipped on this team. And they're playing tough now. And it's like, it's fun to watch. I mean, I watched McCabe play in Buffalo. And he played tough. And you know, he plays hard in Chicago too. But I'm seeing something out of him. He's taking another step defensively, and also just showing that, listen, when you come into Toronto, it's a hard place to play. And when you go on the road, it's just the same. We have fans that travel well. We have a bunch of home barns all over the league, and we're just going to take it to you. So, and that allows room to be open for Austin, you know, Slick Willie, guys like that, that can, Marner when he's back, and Tavares, so these guys can go and do their offensive stuff, because they know they got these guys that are, you know, the Bobby McMahons, the Bertuzzis are going to be so huge in the playoffs, and I think fans are going to fall in love with them come playoff time. And then, you know, Domi's been phenomenal for them, filling in when guys have been injured, so, and he's got that mean streak, so it's just kind of, everybody's doing the role, and it seems like the identity is starting to get shaped out nice for the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is a good thing, because for years it was like, who are they? What are they doing? There's no jam come playoff time. Everybody's just kind of laughing and they think they're cool. And it's like, now it's like, okay, it looks like they got a chip on their shoulder and they finally kind of had that breaking point of enough's enough.
Yeah, and we'll see if it translates in the postseason.
Yeah, we'll see, though. That's the thing. The big thing is, come playoff time, you can act tough in the season, but everybody's tough come playoff time. So
yeah, And also, yeah, you don't want to find yourself killing penalties. And I know the penalty kill has been better recently, but if there was a thing that you'd be most afraid of being their undoing, I think it would be killing off some penalties. I mean, speaking of some rough stuff, we saw that incredible scene at MSG the other night between the Devils and Rangers. Listen, you work for NHL Network now, so you would know. But the fact that there was no supplemental discipline handed down to anybody, including the head coaches involved, is that the NHL explicitly saying the thing that is so very true that that was just sweet?
They should have done reverse fines and given everyone involved a $5,000 bonus is what they should have done.
Yeah, hockey is hot right now.
Yeah, hot in the streets.
And fighting is back. And God, gosh darn it, I retired a year too early because that would have been It's fun again, which is great. It's kind of amazing that rivalry and you know, Jersey's out of it, but for them to kind of step up for their teammate and then everybody grabs a dance partner. I mean, that's what's just amazing about hockey. And I don't care who you are and hockey, fighting belongs in the game, and it is what it is. And there's obviously precautions to take, so guys, safety is valued, but it's just part of the culture of the game, and it's what makes it amazing. And look at what Rempe's done in the short time, how he's just galvanized that city and become a cult hero off of, you know, he's played maybe 2 minutes a night. So it's just amazing how a guy like that can be more valuable than a Sabanajet or a Panarin on that team in terms of the fans loving him. So it's amazing. So it's a cool scene to see. And when people kind of say, oh, fighting doesn't belong in hockey, I'm like, just go watch that clip and go see how loud MSG was. And even the time before that, like, you couldn't hear anything. You couldn't hear yourself thinking there because people are just going bananas. And they, you know, it's the last kind of gladiators, which is an interesting, it's fun to see. And I'm glad it happened. It's nice to kind of, I wish the camera guy would have zoomed out a little bit, though. He was kind of missed a few fights. So I was a little more upset with that. He was trying to do a, he was trying to do like a Blair Witch thing or something. And I was just like, can you just zoom out? Can we stop reinventing the wheel? Just zoom out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had to wait until like after that game to get the overhead footage.
Yeah. Like in the moment.
Yeah.
No, bird's eye view and let's let it ride, or zoom in on Rempe and just stay on Rempe all the time.
But it doesn't happen enough. That's why, like, yeah, the TV producers, or directors, they're like, what do we do here?
Can you imagine the freak out in that control room?
Camera six, row four. Just a lot of that.
They would have been wise. Just, give me wide angle. Anyways, we should all be TV directors, I think.
Look how smart we all are.
Jason.
It's easy.
It's so easy. Jason, this was an absolute pleasure. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Hey, all right, guys. Take care. Appreciate you.
See ya. Don't get run over by a car. Jason Demers, analyst for NHL Network.
I might have to start giving out that award. Just like every Monday, the person I would most like to hit with my car the weekend. I know. I already know who yours is. Already, like preemptively, it's John Schneider.
Oh, I was gonna, like, in the NHL, like, who?
Oh,
is
no,
that? Yeah.
No,
I don't want to run John Schneider over.
That's what Jason DeBears does when he doesn't like people.
Yeah,
and you don't dislike John Schneider, you dislike the decision not to put Davis in.
Yeah, and maybe he's your avatar for the decisions.
Hold on, I thought I've been the one kind of banging that drum, and you've said no, he has to wear it.
He does have to wear it. That's okay. Part of the job. Right. But okay. it's I do sympathize a little bit with him.
Okay.
To my point about the NHL implicitly saying, that's sweet. Like, everybody, here's what they could have done. Mm. You can suspend or fine whoever you want out of that thing. And
it's the NHL. They can do it all the time.
Yeah. And I guess the George Perros is supposed to be at arm's length, but the NHL, like, if they wanted to send a message to the world.
Yeah.
Not to the NHL and not to the players, but to the world. It's like, I know this thing took off and it was on everybody's phone and you couldn't, it was like the sports story of the night. This is not what we're about.
Mm-mm.
And here's why. These guys are fine. Bad boys. Guess what they didn't do?
None of that.
That.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Oh, my God. Thank you. As he mentioned also, just like as Demers said, it's like that guy, Rempe, as big a star as Breadman, as Zibanejad in New York. What would Matt Rempe look like if he was a Leaf? Like, Ryan Reeves is beloved, but it was very much understood. This was part of it. There was also the start of the season in which he was very much not beloved. But part of the Rempe appeal is that it came out of nowhere. This is a sixth-round pick from the 2020 draft, okay? Like, could you imagine if the Leafs had that creature just appearing out of nowhere on the fourth line, and he's forechecking, and he's fighting the way he did? Like, we thought, like, again, Ilya Mikheyev got soup commercials, and he just said, I like soup. I want it. And then he got soup. That was it. He was just like, it's kind of hot out. I still want some soup. Give it to me. And he got soup commercials.
Tough for Simon Benoit that they're already sponsored by milk.
Yeah. I feel like he should, like, he should have got a cut of that.
Yeah.
A little taste.
Well, I mean,
not a taste of milk either, like a real financial taste.
Yeah, he should appear in some of those milk commercials. Yeah. Maybe like a return to the Doug Gilmore cow legs.
There's some element to that. Also, though, it's like, I don't know, Ontario dairy farmers, Quebec guy. I don't know. It's tough. I don't know. I don't know how that
works.
Maybe
they want to run him over with their cars?
Or maybe they...
Their tractors?
Or it's like they claim him, and it's like, we got your guy. One of us. One of us. That was perfectly unhinged at 8 a.m. the week. Good job, Ben. That's a good smoker's cough you have as well for a non-smoker. That's great. There's nothing to say after that. No, there's not.
The show is over.
Yes, it is.
This has been the Bad Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brad Gunning, Sportsnet 590. Good morning.
Good morning.